Acknowledging this witch is here. This witch is here now, just absolutely here now. The opportunity to acknowledge what is here, the opportunity to to be open, to be present. To be freely present and alive to what is truly here. Just feel this now as you breathe, feel yourself here. Feel what is here. Watch, notice, feel. What is here? And even if there is something going on in the mind that is puzzled, that perhaps is even confused, just notice this. That's all, just notice. And allow yourself simply to be open to what is here. That's all. Here now, just being aware and recognizing that this you that is here is aware, is awake, fully aware, is present, is alive in the now. This is it. This is it. Now, as you feel yourself opening and allowing yourself to be present to this, just feel the openness, that's all. Acknowledge the openness. Cherish the openness. Give thanks for the openness. As you feel this thanksgiving, notice that something within you softens and lightens and becomes more awake, more aware, more alive, more curious. Something in you is aroused. That something in you that is here, that is presence, that is only here, only happening now, only alive now. So as you notice this now, take a deep breath in. And as you breathe out, just feel yourself affirming and acknowledging, I am here. Present now, as this openness, this which is here, take another deep breath in, breathing into your body, your form. Again, this which is simply here, the energy of your being, the space, the room, the sounds, the flow of what is happening here. As you breathe into your body, just feel yourself present, fully present in the now. As you acknowledge this, take another deep breath into your body and gently stretch. And as you open your eyes, just allow yourself to feel this, which is here. Feeling the gift of being present in this moment and open. Take a stretch and open your eyes. So, hello everyone. How is everyone?
Great. Wonderful.
What's happening here?
Presence.
We don't know. Presence.
Life. Joy. Life.
Joy. Life. Truth is happening here. Life is happening here. That which is alive is happening here. Who's been around me for a while? Well, a few of you have. And you've probably noticed something that is voiced in a tagline. There's a tagline that we have for living awareness and around the service, the programs, the sharings, etc. Does anyone know what the tagline is? Three words. Oh well, that's certainly a really important acknowledgement. There's three words that, I guess, in essence, sum up what this invitation is about, what this sharing is about.
Love, laughter, liberation.
Love, laughter, liberation, yeah. Now, you would have observed, and you've heard me say many, many times, that I'm here to share with you the truth of yourself, of existence. It's not my truth, it's not your truth, it simply is. And that in the nature of being awake to this, there's this profound lack of seriousness. Now, I know that, you know, by the tendency or the nature of the ego, that oftentimes you're still perhaps coming here with seriousness. Yet the invitation continues for something else. Okay, maybe sincere. Maybe there's a depth. But there is an aliveness. There's a lightness. There's a humor. There's a joy. There's a freedom. There's a playfulness that is discovered when we are really awake to truth to self, to the truth of existence. And so I, as you know, observe. Being present, one can't help but observe. And I have certainly observed over somewhat a period of time that there's this sense of soberness around satsang, around spiritual gatherings, which is not what I'm actually here to share with you. I'm here to, I guess, encourage you to recognize, invite you, inspire you to recognize that truth is in the opposite direction to this soberness. Everything you are looking for is found in something very, very different than all this soberness. And if we look at our world, you look at the general tendency of humanity, there's just this overwhelming burden of seriousness and this sense of a heaviness, a deadness, isn't there? And I'm sure you recognize that in yourself so often. You know, that so often you feel like you're dragging yourself through this life and that you're facing everything around you that's just dead and stuck and stale, lifeless. Look at our systems. Look at generally the systems we are living within, the institutions we live within and by. What are they built on? They're not actually built on life, that which is alive. They're built on everything that is dead, everything that's known, constructed, conformed, systemized, predictable, everything that is based on the past, maybe possibly a hope of the future. This is all dead stuff. It's dead matter. There's only so far you can go with that. There's only so long you can endure that. Why? Because you are life. You are alive. You are the creation of life, the ongoing momentum of life, designed as life, to be alive, to experience aliveness, to celebrate aliveness. In actuality, this so-called thing, enlightenment, is already you. This so-called thing you're searching for, trying to get something else to add to yourself, it's already you. It's already us, this existence. It is here. Truth is the very living presence, the aliveness of everything here in this moment. Truth is not a concept. Truth is aliveness. Now, if what one is seeking is to reawaken to this, then it's crucial you move towards that which is alive. This is crucial. At some point, you have to let go of everything that is dead, everything that's stale. At some point, you have to let that die. And yet, in the fear of letting that go, you are the living dead. In the fear of letting go of what is actually dead, you are smothering yourself. You're killing yourself. Sometimes not even so softly. So you see, when I enter this space with you, and here we are, present, alive, meeting, engaging, I am overfilled with joy. I'm just bursting with joy. I can't help but laugh. And everything in my being is dancing. It's vibrating, it's bursting with life, saying, yes, yes, come, come with me. Let us be in this withness with existence, in this withness with truth, with the aliveness. Come. Wake up to this. Laugh with this. Dance with this. Die to everything that's dead. Now, if you really watch, if you're really open and you really watch and you have really been watching this being, you will see that consistently. You will see that I challenge you in every moment you want to hold on to what is dead. And the ego doesn't always like it. Yet if what you're saying you're seeking is truth, that is all you are going to get back every time you try to bring the dead with you. And if you've been really present and watching, and if you're really present now, you will see and feel that the invitation, the demonstration, whether you want to call this a teaching or whether it's something you can trust or believe in or not, if you just watch, you will see it is very simple. You will see that it is actually irrefutable, that I am not separating myself or distinguishing myself or distancing myself from you. I am saying it is aliveness. I may be reflecting that to you fully because I am awake to it. So I am inviting you to the laughter, the play, the dancing, the joy, the freedom of yourself, to be utterly engaged, to be utterly open to what is alive. Open your eyes, open your senses, open your being fully, 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 fully. Come here to yourself. And you know what? You know that's what you want. You know. Because in any single moment, wherever it began, whenever you started to take on anything that was dead, that part of you that is eternal life started whispering back at you, come home, be present, remember, be here, celebrate, celebrate life. Now, sadly, the more you collect the dead, of course, the more you silence that voice until there's a point where that voice becomes angry or sad or frustrated or completely exhausted, and that voice drags you. It drags you to a different place in yourself. It commands that you come to a different place in yourself. You know, the ego and that strange, futile attachment to everything that is dead is very much like a salesman. There was this salesman who'd been on the road for years, travelling from one place to the next, of course, doing what a salesman does. And all the while, as he'd been traveling from one place to the next, there was this growing disquiet in his soul. And the stronger and louder this disquiet became, of course, the more he traveled, the more places he went to achieve his success, to find what he was looking for, etc. And all the while, the more places he went to, the more weary and the more disquiet his soul became. Until a certain day, as he was driving along, he felt so suddenly, completely overwhelmed and exhausted. He felt, this is it. This is crazy. This is just madness. I have to stop. I have to stop this journey. I have to give up. I've just got to stop. I can't do this anymore. And even though he was so completely weary and completely exhausted, still, he soldiered on thinking, oh, but if I can just get to the next place, then I'll stop. If I can just get to the next place, then I'll stop. Well, he's driving down the road, reaching for the next place. And a kilometer passes. He sees a hotel on the left. Room vacant. No, but if I can just get to the next place, then I'll stop. He keeps driving, driving. Of course, he's thinking of the next town, you see. Just get to the next town. But meanwhile, along this desolate road, he's passing one little motel after the other. He passes another kilometre down the road, room vacant. And as he continues driving, he's getting more and more and more exhausted until he's barely a kilometre from the next town. And he just can't drive anymore. He knows that if he tries, everything will fail him. And in that very last moment, he sees just coming up ahead of him a hotel with a sign that's flashing, room vacant, bink, not vacant. Ah! Oh my God! What am I going to do? Frantic, he runs in to the hotel. But your sign just said vacant. Now it says not vacant, please help me. Well, the room manager just looks at him, shrugs, not feeling disturbed at all. Sorry, sir, but the room has been... Oh, now, wait just a moment. Actually, come to think of it, upstairs in room 20, yes, there's a room with two beds. Oh, there's a woman in the second bed, but there's a screen around her and she's sleeping very soundly. So don't worry about that. If you just go up to the bed, take your bed, everything will be all right. Just go upstairs, go to the bed, and everything will be fine. So the salesman, of course, at this point, feeling so completely desperate, can barely carry his legs up the stairs. He gets up the stairs. He gets to the room. Well, suddenly, he comes flying out of the room, screaming frantically, runs down the stairs, back into the lobby. He gets to the lobby, and the room manager is talking on the phone. And the man's frantic, flapping his arms, trying to get his attention, while the room manager just looks at him and continues his conversation calmly. Well, the poor salesman is almost falling to pieces when finally the room manager hangs up the phone, turns and says, "Yes, can I help you?" He says, "Did you follow my instructions?" And the frantic man, who's just a complete blubbering mess now, says, "Yes, no,
I don't know, but the woman in the room is dead. The room manager looks at me and says, well, yes, sir, I know that, but how the hell do you know that? Yeah. What a conundrum, hey? You see, this is another nature of the human condition, right? The nature of the ego, in its innocence, it's an incredibly curious thing, right? We're very curious. Naturally, we're so curious. The problem is that the ego becomes too involved and invested in this curiosity. It becomes so involved and invested in this curiosity that it's too interested in everything that is outside. Everyone else's business. Anything and everything other than myself, who I am. What is here? What is going on? What is my business? What is my existence? What is? The ego is too involved in anyone else and everything else. It's also too involved in everything that's dead. So you see, this little story where taking a journey with tonight has great depth and meaning in it. It has humor in it too, right? I mean, that's a pretty funny situation, isn't it? So, well, the salesman, as I was saying before, you know, the ego is really very much like a salesman. Think about it. The ego is always looking to sell something, always looking for something better to buy, to sell again, to gain something, to add something to oneself, to achieve something, to feel whole, to feel successful, to be rewarded, to somehow have something to finally get to live. Now, the ego is also very much like the salesman, that there comes a point where one grows incredibly weary of that effort. Just by the nature of that effort, by chasing everything that is external, that is outside of oneself, by chasing everything that has nothing to do with you, by chasing everything that is not even alive. There's no life in that. I mean, think about it. What's the primary interest of the salesperson? Material objects. Dead matter. Now, we can look at that in two ways. Literally, as in our obsession with matter in order to feel secure, to feel fulfilled, which is tied into the illusion of permanence. You think if you can finally get that thing, that object, you'll be fulfilled, you'll be secure, you'll be sufficient, you'll be enough, your life will be okay, then you can live. And there's no such thing as permanence. Aliveness is impermanence, transience, forever unfolding. That's the irony, that's the paradox, that's the aliveness. In the second way, when we talk about being obsessed with matter, materiality, we're talking also about being obsessed with something you can put in a box, something you can name, something you can define, something you can own, you can possess, and you can say, yes, I know it, I've got the truth, I am this, I am that. Finally, right, that's it. It's in a box. therefore it's got to be real, got to be true. Okay, I'm safe now. Not. Because still, the soul knows that is a lie. The soul knows this. The soul knows what is true. The soul is the ever-present spark of life, aliveness itself, beckoning you to be it, to be present as it, to be awake as it, to participate in it, to engage with it. So, if you meditate on this story I've just shared with you tonight, you can contemplate around it and you'll find many, many layers within this. The metaphor is deep within this. Of course, there's the same inclination to just keep trying to get there. Oh, if only I can get there, then I can stop. Then I can finally know the truth. I can finally find truly what I need. Because all the while that salesman was traveling and traveling all through those years, traveling down the road, that call in him got deeper and deeper and deeper. That ache, that yearning to come home to truth, to feel freedom, to feel joy, to feel alive again. To know, who am I, what is this all about? And even though that yearning was so deep, still, oh, but if I can get there, what is the typical spiritual seeker doing? Oh, but if I can get there. And typically in our society, what have we provided for that call? One primary example as an answer to that call in this world, religion. And you know what religion is? Constructed on the dead. It is constructed on events, historical anecdotes of the past. It is constructed on concepts of a power outside of yourself, outside of existence, as it is living right here, right now. It is dead. Let alone the fact that I actually don't know one religion that is established in humour. Now that's saying something. And then we see that finally, when by sheer exhaustion there can be nothing else but the surrender to finally seek the sanctuary, to finally come to rest, to finally stop, to come back to self. Still, there is too much interest in what is out there, outside of oneself. Now, what did the room manager instruct the salesman to do? He instructed the salesman to go straight up to the room, go to that bed, it's okay, the woman in the other bed has a screen around her, she's sleeping very soundly now, if you just go to your bed, everything will be fine. That is an entire metaphor in itself. Let's consider, if the salesman had followed the instruction, if the salesman had not indulged his curious mind, his ego, that still had to know about everything else outside of himself, everything except stop and surrender to himself. But let's consider, if instead of that, the salesman had followed the instruction, what was he told would happen? If you go to bed, everything will be fine. Do you know what that means? Rest? What else? What is engendered in that? What is within that for everything to be fine? What occurs? Trust? What else? What has to be there for everything to be fine? Stillness? Peace? What else? The sanctuary? Which is what? Yourself. Where is it? In yourself. In the stopping. What else? Stillness? Innocence. Pure innocence. It was what he was seeking. Now, everything he was seeking was all of this. Now, everything will be fine points you back to the truth that when you are present as that which you truly are, you know that everything is fine. When you are present to yourself, absolutely, as that which you are, without any distraction, without any externalizing, without indulging anything more to do with the salesman, to do with the ego, to do with anything that is dead, forget that. You wake up to the truth that you are it. Everything is fine. Everything is in perfect order. You come into a deep rest. That was also in the metaphor, that he could go to bed and everything would be fine. And what happens when you let yourself come home absolutely to yourself is that in that depth of surrender, surrendering over to nothing but yourself, to nothing but the now, that rest brings you to everything that is awake and everything that is alive. And when you are awake to everything that is alive, everything is fine. More than fine. And then your journey becomes a journey of true living, a journey of a wakeful aliveness. No more investment in whatever's dead. No more distraction, displacement, projection over there, chasing, trying to buy anything and sell anything to make something more in order to you can finally get to the place where you can truly live. Whether you're trying to buy more knowledge or you're trying to sell more credibility. That's just nonsense. And so when we give up the dead, we discover something very, very real. We discover true spirituality. What do I mean by this? To me, laughter is more sacred than solemn prayer. Dancing is more liberating than reciting mantras. And loving all of existence is more spiritual than going to any church or temple. Becoming the nobody is so much more significant than becoming a saint. I'm interested in everything that is alive. I'm interested in you and all that you are because you are alive. I'm interested in celebrating all that is true with you because we are the one aliveness. I'm interested in inspiring a celebration of this aliveness so that humanity can awaken. Can awaken to the joy. Can awaken to the truth that is living here within us, within everything that is alive right here, right now. That's what I'm interested in. Now, I don't know about you. That's up to you. But right here, right now, you're in this space. And I'm presenting that inquiry to yourself for your own contemplation. Will you continue being the salesperson, the salesman? Or will you come home? Will you wake up and throw your head back at the sky and laugh at existence? Because it is alive, because it's all around you and inside of you? Will you step into the now and celebrate the aliveness of the flower, of the bird flying above you, of the person sitting next to you? Will you celebrate the aliveness? Will you dance freely on wildly and ecstatically, simply because you are alive, because there is something so moving and so sacred in this aliveness that you can't help but move with it. Will you love existence so deeply and so fully that you recognize the divinity, the spirit, the perfection, the truth, the eternal life, the oneness of everything and every moment? Where? Here. When? Now. Let's take some moments to contemplate. And what does this metaphor mean for you? What is the invitation within yourself? How is this voice your voice, the voice of your soul? So here now, you can take three deep, full breaths, and as you do, feel yourself relaxing, surrendering, coming to bed with yourself here now. See what is awaiting within you here now. Now, take a moment to acknowledge what reveals itself here in this self-presence. What arises here, what is present here. Acknowledge whatever it is. That is here within you, that is present. And as you acknowledge this, take a moment to give thanks, to appreciate this moment of coming to bed with yourself, coming to rest with yourself, coming just to be here. And with that gratitude now, take a deep breath into your body, again acknowledging the self that you are, the self that is here, the existence, the aliveness that is here now. Take a deep breath into your body. Gently stretch and open your eyes. So what happens for you as you invite yourself into this moment to go to bed with yourself, perhaps contemplating this metaphor, how it relates to you here now? What happens?
I want to stay in that bed.
So what does the bed represent?
Relaxation. Just a yummy feeling of just relaxing, feeling cozy and...
What else might it represent?
Joyous as well. Mm-hmm. I felt safety as well. Like it's mm-hmm. just, yeah.
Mm-hmm. What about that the bed is merely symbolic for coming to rest fully present in the now? And that, therefore, the bed is always here, is always you, is always now. So guess what? You momentarily might have forgotten, and really it is just momentarily, you might have forgotten, but actually you're in this bed already forever. The bed is always here. So again, it's not wanting to hold on to a certain object or a certain setting in order to feel this. It's recognizing what is really here provides that space, that comfort, the sanctuary, the solace that you're looking for in every moment. Anything else?
Maybe I've missed some of the metaphor. Not everyone else has got it, but The dead person in the bed next to me still bothers me.
Exposing that, but you're being honest about that too. So I'm not laughing at you, beloved. And you see, this is still part of the dilemma of the ego, the very fact that even death bothers you. The dead person next to you bothers you. When within this metaphor is the message that pervading, penetrating truth that you've been trying to hold on to everything that is dead, and in the process actually creating a sense of deadness, being afraid to truly live and experience life as it is, and that includes death. That everything's dying around you in every moment. Are you bothered by the cells that just died and fell off?
On some level, I get the impermanence.
Yes,
I understand it. I don't like it, though.
And so this is this pivotal point that I mentioned earlier, that there are aspects to coming home to truth that the ego will not like. The ego does not want to face, because there's been eons invested in these stories, in the illusion. There's been eons of your time, of your lifetimes invested in this. And as I said, you know, the presence, the sharing, is it's going to be this two dynamic play. There are going to be things that I put right in your face, that the ego will go, oh, I don't want to know that. No, don't want to know that. And what am I going to do? What am I going to do? I'm going to say, go to bed and everything will be fine. Yeah? So, this not liking how things are is so disempowering, disengaging. It smothers you. It suffocates you. Sometimes that means that your dharma is actually in facing the very thing you don't like. There's the salesman. That was the dharma. That was the perfect setup of the universe as it is in absolute truth, exposed, not hidden. Maybe seemingly hidden by a screen. But you see, it's not hidden because the human is too curious. You see, there's that part of you that is too curious that actually you can't even hide or pretend you are hidden or pretend that is hidden from you, from your innermost knowing, from the innermost reality. You can't hide from that. You can pretend. You can pretend you can hide from it. You can pretend it's more comfortable to hide from it. But it's not.
So if I get that at some point, then I can play here and play with matter, what's outside. So my curiosity, haven't I come here to maybe do that, to play with this stuff? Because it's fun and it's great.
That's it. That's what I'm saying. This is your liberation. It's play with it. Be alive. Get up and dance with it. Yahoo! Yes. Oh, what's this? What's that? Don't resist it. Don't be repulsed by it. Sit next to the corpse. No, really. I'm asking you to go bed next to a corpse. Right? Truth is asking you to get right into bed next to that and not be bothered by it. Both not be bothered by it and not be possessed by it. Because remember that the dead body represented more than just that literal moment of having to just come home completely, go to bed with yourself, go to bed with everything absolutely as it is, including the dead body right next to you. And it represented that willingness to put aside one's fixation, attachment in everything that is dead, to put aside that fixation of having to find it outside of yourself first. You see what the salesman did? Instead of going to bed, he still looked outside of himself for something. Ooh, there's a woman asleep behind the screen.
I came a bit late when you were sharing that story, so just on time.
You actually came in the now.
Yeah, just on time when you were sharing that
story. You actually arrived in the now.
Okay. While thinking about that story, that salesman and the manager in the hotel, there's ego part when maybe I think when he's, you know, pushing like, okay, next town. But when he's in the room and he's curious to see what's on the other side of the screen, you know? And it's very basic human nature. And that's what makes us human, right? It's like the story from God says to Adam, don't eat that apple. You are curious. You have to do that. Or simply you're walking in a park. There's a bench which says, wet paint, don't touch. You have to touch it.
Just to see if, is it actually still wet?
Yeah. And then there is a paradox, like bed is here and now you can have your, you know, you can relax and sleep good. But you know, okay, it's always here, you know, what's the hurry? Just look on the other side and then I will go to bed.
Mm-mm-mm.
And I think that's the whole story. Okay, it's here, what's the hurry, you know, which makes it more ironic in a way, like, we will rest. What's the hurry, you know? Mm-hmm. So just look on the other side, and then there's the bed, I will go to sleep. So, and that's what we do, and we just can't go to bed without looking on the other side. So you
see, this is where it starts pointing to a much deeper shift, to approaching ourselves in a very different way. So, yes, as I said earlier, of course, absolutely, the human makeup is very curious. Naturally, we are very curious. As I pointed out, also, it is that same curiosity that becomes perverted, distorted, obsessive, that keeps us locked and trapped in the ego and incapable of absolutely dropping every distraction to be absolutely, finally, utterly present. Instead of a deflection again, instead of, you know, pursuing something outside of ourself. And that's the metaphor in the salesperson, is that part of the ego is still going, oh, well, for example, well, what's the hurry? I'll get to the next town, when actually the soul is saying, now! Be present now!
You see? So it still is referring to that aspect of the ego that just is so resistant to putting everything aside, forgetting those curiosities and coming right here, right inside. Buddha did this. Buddha realized there had to come a moment where no matter what temptations, no matter what distractions were placed before him, it was a matter of absolute presence to self in awareness, to existence as it is, without having to engage with something outside. So I'm not talking about the natural quality of curiosity that continues and in fact is even more alive when we are truly present. True, pure curiosity, not ego-driven curiosity that keeps us actually at a distance from ourselves, at a distance from awakefulness. That's why there's a little bit of a paradox in there, you see. Thank you.
I kept getting the this feeling of being in my garden, chasing my chooks with a hose. Because they kept digging up the grass that I just planted. But I wasn't really that concerned with the chooks. That, you know, the feeling I got was just, it was a lovely day and you know, the sun was shining and there was a breeze blowing and there I was with this hose making this beautiful arc of water up in the air. And I just felt this is being alive.
Right. Absolutely.
And that word fine, that you said everything's going to be fine. I realised I could see all the fine detail. Everything was much finer. The edges weren't blurry.
Mm-hmm. Vivid.
Vividly
alive.
Vividly alive, yeah.
Right.
Exactly.
And that's what happens when we actually really come into presence and engage with what is alive. It is as if these veils just fall away, suddenly as if you're seeing everything for the first time, because guess what? You actually are anyway. And everything is absolutely alive when you are engaging with what is in the now. Now, when you're in the mind, when you're in everything that's dead, the ego and that journey, the salesperson in the journey, what happens to that vividness? What happens to that fineness? What happens to that peace and knowingness that actually everything is in perfect order? Everything is absolutely the truth of existence. Everything. Everything is the truth, here, now, alive. What happens to that? It's as if it has vanished. What happens to the vividness of the colours surrounding you, the shapes, the sounds, the sensations? Where's it gone? Well, it hasn't gone anywhere at all. The only thing that's happened is you've disengaged by actually putting your attention or your fixation into that which is dead. That which is not living. That's all. So what was I saying earlier? Which invites a consideration of an opening, an engaging with self, with truth, with this reawakening to self, with this reunion with self, compared to the usual pathways that most humanity pursues or follows, for example, such as religion. You know, I gave some examples that typically religion or, you know, a so-called spiritual path that's bound to some lineage and all its rules and regulations and must-dos and must-not-dos, etc. Like solemn prayer, for example. What would happen if instead of putting so much effort into that, you laughed a bit more? You just woke up and laughed with yourself, with existence. Have a bit of fun. Have a bit of humor. You know, the ego is incredibly serious. And the wonderful thing is when you come to bed with yourself, when you come home and you actually stop and you look, suddenly you see how ludicrous all of that is, then you really do laugh. How can you be so serious about it anymore? When you see simply what is, you can't be so serious about it anymore. And what about, what else was I saying? Dancing. You know, dancing freely, wildly. Wow, there's just so much more liberating than reciting a mantra. And please don't think I'm actually disregarding elements of beauty within that or that I'm disrespecting that. Simply, what I'm pointing out is that typically reciting a mantra is doing nothing more than, again, putting yourself in this mechanistic habit, this pattern, this behavior of something that is defined and somehow fixed into this concept, this idea that if you just repeat it enough times, finally, bing, you'll get it. Get what?
How's that?
Yeah, thank you.
Okay, the woman in the bed, I think context, of course, is everything. Now, if the salesman peeked over and saw a serene elderly lady that had been respectfully, you know, dressed, etc., appropriately for someone that had passed, with maybe, you know, a gentle smile on her face, you know, then perhaps he, you know, if she no longer had the need for her body or her death, I don't suppose he really had a need for it either and could have let that go and relaxed and had a good night's sleep. On the other hand, if there was an axe head hanging out of a forehead and he is an axe salesman... That could be the waste of a perfectly good axe.
or cause for fear of incrimination. Wonderful. Well, yes, I mean, one could consider the context in any number of ways. What's important to recognize about this sort of metaphor is that actually it's a cone. Does anyone know what a cone is? Anyone heard of that word? Cone is an insight, a contemplation that is presented in a way that typically confounds the mind, deliberately so. Mistakenly, many people think of it as a puzzle, something to solve, when in actuality, the metaphor that takes us into truth, or the koan that takes us into truth, that invites us to see from a different place, it's not a puzzle at all. It can't be solved. It can only be dissolved.
Okay. Yeah, because koans, well, my understanding is they're things that appear to be illogical, but yet when considered for long enough, you know, a different way of looking at the problem, you know, can arise. and you know, like the sleeping next to a dead person seems totally illogical, but it depends on the circumstance, like I put forward before. So if the person has, you know, died, you know, an appropriate death and has been respectfully treated, why should the person or other people carry that death with them?
I guess
when they can let it go. Sorry, it's not a question. It's a statement.
No, no, no.
More than a question,
I understand.
But yeah.
Although I guess what I'm pointing back to is that the koan itself is not about the detail of the context. The koan itself is about the state of one's being in relation to the koan. The state of oneself in relation to the koan. And you said it before that initially, it seems illogical, the mind is confounded, and the mind wants to actually attack it logically. The mind wants to bend it and shape it and shift it so that somehow it fits something that is acceptable. And the point of the koan is, according to the logical mind or the ego, it's not acceptable. That's the whole point. Because until we get to that place that there is no choice but to surrender, we don't awaken to what is true. Because to approach anything in this fashion that is an attempt to make something fit, to make something acceptable, is to bring one's conditions along. And the koan is about dissolving those conditions. Thank you.
Thank you for this amazing opportunity. What happened for me, which is not unusual, I go very deep. I see a lot very quickly. I got a really beautiful message. And then I'm guessing it's maybe my ego or my mind goes, oh, whoops, we don't want to go there. And I'm out again. And I felt it was related to what that lady brought up. It's like that fear. And so what I've been ruminating on as I've been listening and the sharings is that my mind is afraid of losing control when it goes and sits in that place, because the peace and the stillness that I find there and that, you know, the picture that was instantaneous was a beautiful garden, and then there was a being in the garden, and I got all these beautiful words. So, I don't know. I guess I wanted to ask, what would you have to say to that, part of me? How can I find deeper resolution with not being pulled back out up the tunnel, you know?
Yeah.
Thank you.
Well, in a sense, you've answered part of this dilemma. Yourself, the recognition that there is a fear, the fear of losing control, because as I said before, you know, a lot has been invested in the ego, in the idea that, you know, holding on to and possessing all of these things that are actually dead weight will somehow provide you with security. So that's been a long, 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 long held condition. And it's not just yours, it's a collective story. So it's not just yours that you are feeling. Remember that too. Now, as I commented also, I came back to this interesting dynamic that there seems to be this polarized dynamic in bringing oneself to truth. On the one hand, there's this knowing, this feeling of coming to the sanctuary, a feeling of being appeased, like finally. On the other hand, there's shock, or I have to face the truth. Now, as I was pointing out, it's not actually about whether you hear it. Like I was saying with you, you actually can't hide from that. Something in you does hear the truth anyway. You can pretend You're hiding from it. You can pretend it's not there. So the real point here is not whether you know the truth or you hear the truth or you get the answer of truth. It's whether you'll accept it. That's all it comes down to. Will you accept it? Which brings me to the point of response when you say, what might you consider to acquire a deeper resolution with this? What cultivates a state of acceptance in this regard? Well, that's a journey. That's a process. You can't learn acceptance. You can't learn liberation. You can go through the experience. The more you go through the experience, the more you expand your understanding. The more you ask for the understanding, the more understanding you invite in, the more understanding you acquire. The more understanding you acquire, the more you expand your perspective. The more you expand your perspective, the more is included. The more is included, the more is accepted. So this is why, although I could sit with you all in silence, every single time I could just sit here in silence, and yes, you would gain something enormous. Why I don't do this is because I know and understand the nature of the mind and this process of undergoing that experience. The mind is part of that journey. The mind must go on that journey of going through a process of shifting reflection, deepening reflection, being opened, even being shattered, even being completely confused, presented with something so totally illogical and so unacceptable that it actually creates a breaking down itself. So this is why there is still the dialogue. This is why there is this interactive sharing that's taking the mind into a different place, like twisting and turning, until you come to that place through the experience in yourself.
That is so awesome, thank you. Because what I got from that as I listened to you was the fact that I walk with my guidance all day. I talk to my guidance all day.
Yeah.
I don't sit in silence for an hour a day. I actually talk to them 24/7.
Yeah.
And what I'm feeling, and I didn't appreciate your feedback, is that that is equal to what we did in those 3 minutes.
Absolutely.
And I had never, ever, ever appreciated that before.
Yay!
Wow. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for the self-realization. There is a moment of self-realization. Because you know what? That is the truth within everyone. That's why I was saying before. Even though momentarily you forget, or you're so distracted, or you're so caught up in the idea of what you don't have, of what you are not, which is an illusion, you're not noticing the power of that voice, the power of that awareness and knowing that is already within you. And when you come home to bed, everything is fine. Yeah. Yeah.
My experience of the going to bed was this great surrender, mm-hmm. And just complete not doing, just relaxing or relaxing myself totally. But I was aware that I was aware of wanting to incorporate some sort of a method or something, which is something I recognize I'm so preoccupied with, some sort of a method, whether it's like with the breath or concentrating or focusing on something or other. But my experience of just going to bed was even dropping a technique or a method and just completely relaxing.
Right.
So do you have anything to say about that?
Mm.
Yes. Because to completely surrender and let go is one thing. What's the place of methods and techniques of centering?
You know, that's a really valuable inquiry because, again, there can be a paradoxical nature in how we let ourselves in and regain that allowance, being present, being alive to what is. The paradoxical nature is that on the one hand, really ultimately all it requires is for us to just be here. And so a moment of actually challenging you to be here exposes the attachment, the neediness of method. That does not invalidate, however, the benefit or the purpose of certain methods or application. For example, because there is such a deeply ingrained habit to be non-aware of the living, of the aliveness, bringing your attention into breath, into breathing, is valuable. There is value in that. It's a matter of you finding that point of balance in that play, like I say, what seems paradoxical. In context, in relation to the aspects of you that are still so mechanical, habitually caught in attachments, diversions, etc., then bringing your awareness to things that actually do align with the aliveness, the nowness, is of value. Ultimately then, once you re-engage with aliveness, forget the method. You don't need to worry about the method anymore. As I've explained, for example, in one of my core programs, the presence, really, in a way it is a tool simply to bring you back from that externalizing, you know, to enter in like a key. You put the key in the lock, you turn the key, you open into the space. What do? You just step into the space. You enjoy the space. You don't keep putting the key in and putting the key in and putting the key in. Forget that. Celebrate the space. Okay, one last sharing. Thank you.
But my ego never wants me to meditate.
largely this is because there's so much baggage around meditation, what meditation is, what it means, how do you acquire meditation, etc. There's so many confused concepts and conditions around it all. When ultimately meditation is not an act, it's a state of being. And anything that is alive, that engages you with aliveness, will bring you naturally into that which is truly meditation. This is why I'm saying, really, the invitation is for you to, instead of holding on to your seriousness, embrace the humor, embrace the lightness of life. Have a laugh. Love. Instead of pinning yourself to some fixed idea of an act, whether it's, you know, chanting, reciting a mantra, or, you know, having to sit a certain way, having to get it exactly right in order to get the outcome. Instead of that, get up and dance, you know, just go out in the garden, listen to the birds, watch the leaves, dance with it. You know, these are just suggestions. Make it your quest to look at everything as it is alive, to engage with everything in aliveness, to make that your intention. Right, I'm going to be present, see, experience, engage with everything that's alive, and in a way that I invite myself in and it into me, and I just love. Love, just love existence. Love what existence is. The more you love what is here, what's alive, what's in front of you, the more the true nature of this is revealed to you. And you know what will happen? That effortlessly you will slide on over that hurdle of that illusion that says you have to be afraid of death. You'll slide on over it because you'll see the beauty of the falling of the petals in the evening and the rising of the sun in the morning. You'll see the natural constant flow, forever flowing, forever unfoldingness of life, you'll see that really there actually is no birth or death. So really it is all okay. And the way for that is to be with it. Now, I'd like to actually just come to one last point in relation to that. There's actually a bigger motivation behind me sharing what I do, inspiring, encouraging, inviting you to embrace that which is, to be awake to that which is. And in this instance, the real key contemplation is aliveness. So the bigger motivation is this. You being awake to this, you being present, participating with this, and engaging with this, is integral to the wellness of this planet. Our world, as it is now, is dying rapidly. We're seeing an unprecedented rate of extinctions every single day. Yes, we've had great periods naturally in the process of evolution on the planet, great die-outs, etc. Yet none that have occurred as rapidly within such a short period of time as our infatuation, obsession, and addiction with materialism and matter. Everything that is dead. Through this obsession, through this disconnection to this which is true, forever alive, we are killing this planet. We are killing the well-being of our future. You're waking up to what is here, to what is alive, to what is true. We'll give you the way to truly engage, to negotiate your way through this time of great change on this planet. And you will pave the way for a true change, not just in yourself, but for others. Essentially, for the regaining of harmony within yourself and the whole. And as I've pointed out many, 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 many times, you cannot consider yourself, any one event, any one problem you have, without considering the whole. Your liberation is not an isolated experience or for an isolated gain. Your liberation is for the regaining of the whole. This is my motivation. Now I know there are many ways of responding to this which we're facing right now. And you know what? This is the biggest koan of all. This is the biggest koan that you will face, that humanity collectively is facing now. It is going to require a very different level of presence and response. The gateway is available. Always available, because it is here, it is now. And that which is alive provides everything you need, everything we need, everything we need to know to respond in aliveness, in wholeness, to be here together in bed on the same planet, knowing that everything is fine and that what we are giving and leaving behind is fine. Now, Parts of the mind could take that as being a sober truth or being something so serious. Yes, because to parts of the mind it is overwhelming. To parts of the mind this is so confounding. The mind does not know how to approach it. It is too big. It is too scary. It is too overwhelming to the mind. But in actuality, this is not a serious presentation to you at all. It is sincere. It is the sincere truth and journey and purpose of every single one of us here now in this world. It's just a matter of when are we going to wake up to it? When are you going to wake up to it? When are you going to participate with it in the way you were designed to participate in aliveness? So I'm going to suggest for our closing that we do something a little different than what maybe we've done for a while with satsang. I'm going to suggest you get up and engage and experience this space and this moment in full aliveness. See, participate, engage, encounter. Be absolutely present to this that is alive here now. Thank you for being here with such love, such joy, and such gratitude. Thank you.